it's now $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 a month, because we believe that there's enough, you know, AOV and value and ROI, you know, just to throw enough acronyms out there, in your business, in your products and your services, that we are able to look at it as a total investment and less worried about is Nick spending 20 hours, 2 hours, or 200 hours to help me get there. Right. And that, for me as an individual contributor, as a freelancer, is what has allowed me to continue to scale from the financial side.
Okay, everyone, welcome back to the SEO Entrepreneur Show. I have Nick LeRoy on the show, and he is a freelance SEO consultant, but he also has, you know, well over 10 years of experience working in agency, working in-house. So we're going to get really deep into that. So Nick, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you so much, Nathan. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so you know, let's start with the most obvious one. How did you find this SEO thing?
I think this is always the most fun question because everybody has a different answer. And for me, honestly, I graduated college at the end of 2008 when we kind of were going through that recession. And, you know, I didn't have the best grades. I didn't really stand out for internships. And it ended up turning into it was my first example of like use your network. So I had a family friend who knew somebody that was actually looking for a project manager in a web development firm. I very quickly got an interview for that. And the very first thing he said to me was, oh, I filled that position already. And my first thought was, oh, great, I'm getting like a pity interview, but you know what, let's learn from it. And his second question to me was basically, what do you know about SEO? And at that point, I didn't know a ton. Like, there maybe had been one comment in a book about like search optimization. And my response, being completely honest, I was like, oh, SEO, like I know white hat and black hat, like ranking a porn website versus like an information website. And he kind of chuckled. And honestly, that was kind of enough for him. You know, he was looking for somebody that was really hungry, that could teach themselves SEO. But naturally, he didn't want to make a big commitment from a financial standpoint. But he realized, being a web development firm, he had kind of concrete end times with his projects, and he was sick of sending them out to other people who are making more money. So honestly, it just kind of turned into a 6-month contract. You know, it just got really excited, you know, learned, you know, 9 to 5, but also went home and learned, you know, 5 to 10 as well. And, you know, nearly 15 years later, I'm still just incredibly excited about the industry and trying to learn as much as I can.
Wow, that's amazing. 15 years. It's crazy. Yeah, because I'm about to hit I'm over 10 years, but 10 years since I started my business. And I'm like, man, that's a long time.
Absolutely. I now tell people that I am a recovering agency SEO of 10 years, and I'm celebrating my 4th year of being a freelance SEO.
Right. Yeah. So 2008, wow. SEO was very different back then. So let's talk about a little bit what it looked like back then, then we'll get into what it looks like today.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's funny because I remember when the announcement of like canonical tags came out, and, you know, and there was that like diagram that talks about like two pages that are the same and you should link to it. And yeah, I was still fairly new to the technical side. And I remember saying, oh, this doesn't matter. This canonical thing is weird. But I think what that goes to say is, back then, obviously well before I had joined, SEO was a lot about creating a page or a site that could be discovered, but then having the right words on the page. I mean, it really wasn't that much more. I would say that was the heart of when people started manipulating links, and a lot of link purchasing. You know, private blog networks were less of a thing, you know, but it was a lot of comment spam. But I was very fortunate that I feel like SEO was kind of in its beginning state, and I got to grow to where it is today. Whereas a lot of newcomers to the SEO space today, you know, kind of have to be thrown right into the deep end.
Yeah. It's funny because I started in 2011. So I got my start with PBNs. So that was where,
yeah,
like that, you know, PBNs were the thing at that time. And I was deep into it. I had the whole network. I had everything going. Then I got absolutely nailed. I went away from it. Let's just say that much. But
absolutely. Well, you see the exact match domain, some content that, you know, Made sense. I always joke just to date myself, and Nate, I'd be curious if you did. Did you ever write on e-zine articles?
I did. Yeah, you could probably, if you do enough research, you'll find my author account somewhere.
Yep, I still have mine too, and I intentionally leave it up because it's like sometimes you just need to look back, and it's like the anchor text that I think I'm being really sly about is just like real quick, you know, Minnesota web design, you know,
SEO. Right. Yeah. So you were basically just doing agency from 2008 until recently, last 3 or 4 years. You were just purely in the agency work?
That is correct.
Okay. And so how did that kind of evolve over time? So obviously you were an intern. How did your position grow? And you probably worked at a couple of different agencies. So how did that expand over time?
Yeah, another good question. So just to be clear, I never even had like an official internship. My grades were never good enough to be able to like get in the house. So you know, I kind of got this job thrown at me. I was making a whopping $18 an hour, and it was a contract, no benefits. So it was really kind of prove yourself. And what happened was I found very quickly, like I became passionate about SEO and I was starting to see the results. However, about a year, year and a half into this first job, I was still the only SEO, and I started really developing concerns about whether I actually knew what I was doing, or was I the smartest man in a room of one person? So with that, there is a large company called Thomson Reuters. They have a fine law division, which is the largest agency focusing exclusively on legal SEO here in Minnesota, you know, when we were still all kind of in offices. And I thought, wow, I need to get a job there. There's like 50 SEOs there, and I'll very quickly be able to figure out like, do I know my stuff? Do I really love this or not? So I went there, and I was very fortunate to find out and get the validation that, okay, wow, like I get it. Like, obviously I still have a lot to learn, but very quickly, you know, the cream rises to the top. And what that job allowed me to do is that's when I really started getting into like affiliate marketing, because I was fortunate enough to have built my own processes where I could do, say, my 40 hours of work that they would mandate to be done in 20 hours. And then I'd have like 20 hours to be able to work on my own websites. And then kind of going back to what you were saying, Nathan, it's like, I remember that's when I used to have like auto insurance sites, and I'd create my own PBNs, and remember, you know, one page being able to build me like $2,000 a month. And it was incredible just to get the validation from the 9-to-5 job, and then be able to build and kind of control all aspects of SEO, the quote unquote bad and good tactics. All of it is just a learning experience. Fast forward after that, that's when, you know, I had been married already, but I started having kids. My wife had decided that, you know, collectively that she was going to stay home and watch the kids. So I had kind of decided I needed to, you know, put on my big boy pants and get a job that, you know, paid some decent money and didn't rely on, you know, working on the side to be able to pay the bills. So I went to another agency in downtown Minneapolis, worked there for 4 years, and that was exclusively at enterprise level accounts. And I ended up, we kind of divorced, and I went to yet another agency where I oversaw the SEO channel as a whole. COVID came, our biggest client put in their notice. They made the unfortunate decision to make everybody irrelevant in the SEO channel. And at that point, you know, maybe you can link in the show notes, I share a post kind of going from my 9-to-5 job to transitioning to freelance. And I know this has been a long, you know, story, but that's everything kind of in a nutshell.
No, yeah. So what was the exact role that you had at each agency? So you're like SEO specialist, SEO manager, SEO director. Like, what did that look like?
Let me think about it. So the very first one, I think, was web marketing specialist.
Okay.
Because at the time, it was kind of SEO, but there's a little bit of like PPC. And I knew very clearly that like I didn't like that. So I just kind of avoided it. And then the second one, what was it? It was something weird because it was like a proprietary role, not proprietary, but it was like a special role. It was like web e marketing specialist. Like basically they had a certain product and I supported that layer of it. And then I was a senior analyst being promoted all the way up to manager. And then I had gotten hired at my last role as a senior manager and left as a director.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So the reason I'm asking is because obviously, depending on your role at the agency, there's a different level of politics that come with that. So as a specialist, like you're probably just deep in the work, you're doing the work and, you know, maybe stuff's coming to you and you got to do that. But when you become a manager or director, like how much does your role change and how much do you, you know, what did you learn in that process?
Yeah, it changes significantly. I mean, honestly, like that is the unlocking kind of the second tier of SEO. You know, I've always talked to people and looked at is there's a certain amount of value to you being able to provide SEO services that are of quality, but you almost hit God mode if you can have 10 other people underneath you be able to provide even 80% of the value that you can as an individual. And I think that's when you really start doubling down on communication skills. I think effective communication is the biggest gap in the SEO industry. There's a lot of people that are better at SEO than I am, but they can't talk their way out of a paper bag. And it's just really a critical skill that I think you really start to lean on once you start becoming like a people manager or even become a subject matter expert.
Right. Yeah. I don't think that's talked about enough as far as soft skills. I mean, I talk about it all the time in my training, but you know, we have people come on and say, I can't close a deal. And then, you know, I hear their delivery, I hear their cadence, I hear the way that they are, their personality. And I'm like, because you're not excited. Like you're not excited about this. You're not bringing it out. We're like dogs. We can smell it, right? You can smell when someone doesn't have conviction. You can smell when someone isn't passionate about this. Like you can tell when they don't have energy about this thing. How are you going to close anyone like that? Right.
Absolutely. The best compliment I've ever gotten in my career was actually by a manager I didn't care for so much, but he had said, nobody can ever doubt your passion and you are very authentic.
Right.
There's something about the word authentic that has really resonated and I hold true to this day. In fact, you know, Nathan, if you were to hear, you know, my sales pitches and how I approach things, you probably would shake your head from a what should you do? Because it probably doesn't hit all of those marks, but nobody can say, hey, does this guy know his stuff? And is he passionate? And you know, my big thing is like, I'm not going to lie to you. I'm going to tell you the truth. We're going to have the hard conversations and we're going to, you know, cling, you know, beer glasses to celebrate too.
Right.
It's like you get what you get when you work with me.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, I think there's a ceiling to just being a skilled SEO. Like without if you're just a skilled SEO, that can take you pretty far, but to get to the next level, like, you know, if there's tiers of this, you got to start to integrate the soft skills. You got to start to be able to work with other people because this is a people game. So did you inherently have those skills or did you develop those skills over time to manage people, be able to make sure they're hitting their deadlines, making sure that they're doing the work that they need to be doing in an effective way? How did you get?
Another really good question. I think that was probably one of the biggest mistakes that I made in my career. Because the first 5 years, I was absolutely an independent contributor and I embraced that. In fact, I fought like getting on the phone with clients. I didn't want to talk to AMs and PMs. Like if it didn't go through email, like you didn't get it from me. And my thought was, I don't need to talk. There's salespeople, there's account managers. You know, I just break shit. And it's like, and I can do it. The reality, and Nathan, I know you know this, is anybody that's in that mindset that isn't going to create a property that they own exclusively is going to find very quickly that their earnings is capped. Because as we had talked about, the value is in being able to manage relationships, both with people that you're working with, as well as your clients. So I used to have a lot of anxiety for just even being able to pick up the phone. I mean, to the point where like, I would just turn down work sometimes if people wanted to get on the phone. So a lot of it for me was just like pushing myself outside of my comfort zone. And especially when I started having kids and it wasn't just about, you know, feeding myself or my wife, you know, nothing's off the table at that point. So it was just continuing to push myself, getting those at bats. I know I sounded really weird, you know, but I got used to it. As I continue to double down on my skill set itself, the confidence is built up you know, you're no longer talking about, well, in theory, SEO best practice this. You say, I've done this 100 times. We know that we're going to tackle your titles. We're going to make sure your site is crawlable. We're going to create an editorial calendar. Like, you know what works, and that makes you more confident. And then, like I said, I think what that does is then you're just looking to fine tune your messaging. And as you had also mentioned, building relationships. You know, I do think it's critical to not necessarily view your clients as like friends, but being friendly can give you a lot of extra leeway when there are some rough moments.
Right. Yeah. That's super valuable. So obviously, you know, right now you're a freelance SEO consultant. So what are the revenue streams that you have going for you right now? What do those kind of look like?
Yeah, another good question. So for me, because I had been let go at my jobs, like I understand what it's like to go from getting your quote unquote guaranteed paycheck to zero. And that's really terrifying. So for me, diversification is absolutely critical. And the way that from a freelance perspective is I realize that scale is not on my side. So what I'm trying to do is I'm always working on being able to increase the rates of my clients because I know the value that I'm being able to provide them. So it's definitely value-based pricing. But with that said, I tend to work with 3 to 4 clients on a monthly retainer. So that is 4 streams of income that at any point in time could go away. In addition to that, I have the SEO for Lunch newsletter where I have sponsors every single week. So that's another income stream. And then most recently, I have SEOjobs.com, which is yet another income stream. And then on top of that, I kind of call it my miscellaneous. It'll be one-off consultations, an SEO audit, or, you know, I do have a couple affiliate sites that are just dying a slow death because that's not where I think my time is best used. But all in, you know, I probably have 6 or 7 revenue streams, which allows me to feel really confident in it not all disappearing. You know, there is obviously a situation where, you know, let's just even be realistic. I think you should operate your business as if it's all going to disappear, and building a, you know, safety net is really important. But once you start building those diversifications and build that safety net, you relearn real quick the word no. And as your book says, it's like you take on a lot less of the bad clients or the ones that raise flags, which allows you to get more wins, good testimonials, more referrals. And it's definitely a situation where like the rich get richer.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think that's people who don't do client SEO, I think they don't realize that, you know, you're literally getting multiple streams of revenue. So like with the traditional job, you got one stream. That's it. And that stream, you lose that stream, that's it. You go to zero. But with clients, like clients come and go, right? They come and go and you're still okay a lot of the time. It's pretty rare where you're gonna lose all your clients at the same time. I mean, I've had some months where like, it sucked. Like I lost a few. I'm like, yikes, that hurt. But you know, it's, you just kind of pick yourself up. You're like, well, I just need to keep diversifying, keep compounding, keep get to a point where, you know, it just becomes a higher level of security. Like I don't know. I think I posted on Twitter today about this, but there really is no security in life. At all.
No, absolutely.
Right. There's no security in a regular job. There's definitely no security in a business. So, but we can try to lay foundational elements that at least make it easier. Right.
And Nathan, you'll really appreciate this. The way that I explain the diversification aspect is when I had a 9-to-5 job, I only had to piss off one person to go to zero. Now I have to piss off 4 to 5 to 6 people all at once to go to zero.
It's very true.
And you know what? I might cause some trouble and, you know, I can be polarizing at times, but the odds of me pissing off 5 or 6 people all at the same time is a lot less than, you know, the awkward comment or the political trap you get stuck in with a potential 9-to-5 job.
Right. So let's go back to when you first started doing the freelancing. I know you said kind of what you did was you just kind of put it out there. Hey, I'm doing it now, you know, and just try to come in. So what did that initial, like, was that a good lead generation strategy initially? Did that work well for you?
Yes and no. You know, I think as you and I had talked offline, I was at quite an advantage that, you know, I had been employed doing agency SEO, but I had always been fairly involved with the industry as a whole, you know, whether it be Twitter, writing for blogs or just talking to people and building my network. So I had always taken on like one or two side clients on the side, even when I was working 9 to 5. And to me, like that was always just a little bit of extra money that I could like spoil my kids with, you know, make an extra payment on the car, but never quite get rich. But with all that said, and this is what I mentioned to you before we start recording, was I felt like I built a fairly decent amount of goodwill in the industry. So when I ripped the Band-Aid off and said, I'm going freelance, I was able to basically do two things that I feel like was the key to the success that I had then and even more so now. One was with my SEO newsletter. I think at the time I still only had like 4,000 or 5,000 subscribers, but it was a great opportunity to get the word out that I was regularly available because I had never really advertised, even when I took freelance work on the side, that I was available. It was kind of the right opportunity to just show up. So I did get a couple, you know, at-bats, smaller projects, some smaller retainers through that. But one of the best strategies that I don't even know how I thought about it, but it's really kind of simple, was knowing that I had built my network. I went through my LinkedIn account and you can see everybody that you're connected with. This is like before followers even. And I jotted down names of people that I felt like I had a relationship that either owned their own business or were in a decision-making role. And what I did is I sent them messages. It didn't even cost me money because we were already connected. And I said, hey, Bob, Nathan, like it's been a long time since, you know, we talked. Just an FYI, I went out on my own. I'm super excited, but also nervous. Two quick questions for you. Like one, do you have any advice for me? Because a lot of people are willing to give you advice that's free and doesn't take too much time. And then two, I just say, if you happen to have any work or know of anybody who has work, are you willing to pass my name? And the goal was that because we were connected and with the goodwill, hopefully that was less of like a cold outreach. It was more of just an announcing, I'm available. And you kind of have some lukewarm trust already. And honestly, it was just kind of like I told you at the beginning, getting my first job. It was like Nathan knew, you know, Peter. Peter knew, you know, Bob, and Bob knew Jane, and Jane needed some SEO work. And it all starts from there. It's like, because your best clients are going to be the ones that advocate and refer you to other people, and then they reach out to you. And with all that said, you know, I've been very fortunate being on the freelance side. I don't need the amount of leads and clients that a full-blown agency needs to support 10, 20, 30 heads. I need a handful of clients to be able to make my money and pay my bills.
Right. Wow. Yeah. That took a lot of humility to do that. I mean, to reach out like that, that's a lot of people wouldn't do that. So I respect that majorly.
I took my role and where I was used to being billed at $300-$500 an hour. And when I started, I told people I'd work for $100 an hour. Yeah. And honestly, it was because, again, like you say it takes a lot of humility. And for me, I embraced this mindset of like failure was not an option and like feeding my kids was never not an option. So like I never even looked at it as like, oh, wow, you're taking a step back or you're starting over or you're making less. It was just like, I need to work. Like
you
got to do what it takes. Like I knew that like $100 an hour was enough to be able to like avoid people that were just trying to like resell my time or like weren't serious. And $100 an hour was enough where it's like, if I could get 20 hours from each client, it's like, if I could quickly get $5,000-$7,000 a month in revenue, that pays the bills. It basically remade what I was getting in my salary. Sorry, go ahead, Nathan.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, this is just very important information. I want to dive into what you're talking about. Continue.
Yeah. And hopefully this is the direction you're thinking. But again, kind of going back to, I realized very quickly, I found that freelancing was successful for me. And there was kind of two ways to grow. I either had to hire or kind of go maybe what we'll call the agency route, or I can scale and just raise my prices so that in the end, I could kind of meet that same goal. One would obviously require getting more clients and not necessarily having to raise prices, but increasing revenue. But there's the liability of having other people. And as somebody who has been made redundant, my biggest fear and the task that I personally don't want to take on is having to provide food for other people's families. And I don't want to have to take that away. Now, no judgment to people that are an agency and do that. I mean, that's part of running a business, but it's just not an aspect that I personally am interested in doing. So for me, I realized I can't just take an infinite amount of clients. I'm going to burn myself out. I'll work more hours than I ever did, even in the agency world. So what I did was I kept ratcheting my rates up. Every single time I turned over a client, I went from $100 an hour to $150 an hour, from $150 to $200. And then about at the $200, I decided $200, people start getting a little bit weak knees, you know, when you start talking about $200 an hour. So you stop talking about hourly rates. You talk about $5,000 a month. And then you don't back into it necessarily with hours. You talk about hitting goals and thresholds. And then it started turning into, I don't ever want to talk about hourly rates. So I would intentionally ratchet up to $300 an hour because I don't want people to make the decision of hiring me on cost first. So it's like, if we're trying to hit goals and I can establish the value that I can provide, it's now $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, $10,000 a month because we believe that there's enough, you know, AOV and value and ROI, you know, just to throw enough acronyms out there in your business and your products and your services that we are able to look at it as a total investment and less worried about is Nick spending 20 hours, 2 hours, or 200 hours to help me get there. Right. And that for me as an individual contributor, as a freelancer, is what has allowed me to continue to scale from the financial side.
Yeah, there's a lot to unpack on that front. So
we could talk for hours on that.
No, it's really good because especially in the beginning when you don't have clients, and obviously you had a very long, like you have a very good track record, you have a lot of experience. So you could start at that $100. But I'll tell you, when I started, the only experience I had was working on my own sites, right?
Sure.
So I had to leverage that, all the success of that, and use that as my portfolio. But I'll tell you a funny story. You're starting at $100 an hour. I charged $100 a month on my first client. Okay. No, just to give you some perspective of.
Oh, no. My SEO audits used to be like $300. And yeah. It'd be like just about as the same amount of work as they are right now, at like a $5,000 deliverable. So I get it.
Yeah. And the reason I bring it up is because I think some people hear, you know, they hear you, they hear me, oh, I charge 5,000 a month, or I charge 10,000 a month. And they say, oh, well, I'm going to start doing that right now. But it doesn't work like that. You have to pay your dues. You have to be able to do that. So I've personally tried to tell people, like, you're going to have to eat some dirt. Like, yep. if you want to do this, you're going to have to eat some dirt. So like, how important is that? Because obviously it wasn't overnight that you start charging $5,000 a month. So how did, you know, so we were actually 4 years in, you said, right? So it's, correct. What did that progression, like how long did it take?
Yeah. So, I mean, like I said, I would like to look at it as it actually took me 14 years to be able to hit that. Yeah. Because like you had said, you know, I kind of gave you my backstory on what I charged 10 years into my career transitioning into full-time freelance. But I mean, the amount of $1,000 clients I had taken on, $500 a month, like you said, never quite did the $100 a month, but enough where we know that there's those types of customers. It's like, they just can't appreciate it. And the reality is I don't even blame, my mindset of it is completely different. It's not that they don't appreciate you or they're trying to rob you. The reality is they can't afford you, even at $100 a month or $1,000 a month. And SEO doesn't move fast enough to be able to justify it because the money is coming from their pocketbook and not a marketing budget.
Right.
With all that said, I believe your question is like, basically, how did I get to the rates? Is that right?
Yeah. So, because I think that's the toughest part is like, at what point do you decide to raise the rates? Because like for me, you know, that was a struggle. I was like, okay, I'm going to go up to $500 a month now. And I was like, no one's going to pay for this. And then they did. And I was like, oh, okay, well, I guess I'll try $1,000 a month and see how that does. And then it just keeps going up. So how did you get the courage to raise your rates like that?
I think you'll like this because I inherently like, I don't know. You want to make more money. Like, more money is great, but I'm also quickly realizing that if your goal is just more for more sake, you're never going to be satisfied.
Of course.
So the thing that motivated me the most is doing a deliverable. Let's use SEO audits, for example. Let's say I give you an audit for $1,000. And then I know exactly what it consists of. And then I onboard with a client and they show me an audit result from a big name company and they paid 10 grand for it. And it's 20% of what I provided for $1,000. So to me, that was how I ratcheted that up. And it got to the point where it's like, and I know you've been in this situation. A lot of people listening to this will probably experience this themselves, you get to the point where you see the value you provide, and then you see somebody else charging a multiple of it and providing a fraction of it. So the amount of times I charged $1,000, somebody showed me what a $10,000 equivalent was, and it wasn't even the same, like mine was better. I literally would like get off calls and ratchet up my prices. The other thing that I would say, and this is where I am challenging myself and I try to be vocal about it, is you're only pricing yourself too high when somebody tells you no. And I pause for a moment because I think that's a really important thing to just like sit in. And it's really uncomfortable for me because for me, like going to $200 an hour, even though I was used to being billed for $400 or $500, was really uncomfortable. Like I'm naturally a cheap ass. And it's like, would I pay myself $200 for this? And we always doubt like our own value.
Of course.
So you have to think about it in the sense of what value are they receiving and how are you kind of getting like your cut of it? And it's not just paying you for that fraction of the time or the 30 minutes that you did the title tag or the 4 minutes to change a robot's file, you know, because if they're making $1 million, is you getting compensated for 4 minutes of an hour that you're charging $100 an appropriate value trade? So I think as I got more bats and saw more of that, that's where it made me feel more comfortable. And Nathan, I'd be curious your perspective, because I know you're running at an agency perspective, but even when you're freelancing, there is a certain amount of value that people put in you as you ratchet your prices up.
Yeah.
If I charge $200 an hour and they're talking to a bunch of agencies where they know they're going to get junior resources for that same $200, there's no longer a premium for me. But if I go and tell them I am $300-$400 an hour or 5K minimums or 10K minimums, it automatically kind of gives them the benefit of the doubt of like, okay, I'm shopping for a Rolex, not, you know, a Seiko.
Yeah.
And there are people and companies that are not concerned first and foremost with the cost. They're worried with getting the value. And a lot of people realize you get in value what you pay for.
A
little bit of a rant, but what do you think about that one?
No. So the reason I'm kind of hammering in on price is because it just has such an influence on so many things. And what you're talking about specifically, I really want to talk about, which is the actual number influences how people perceive the quality of the service. Mm-hmm. And this has actually been, I don't know if you've heard this study before, but they did this study. They took three different types of jam. Okay. Just three different types of jam. Actually, sorry. Let me rewind. They were the same type of jam, just in different containers. And the only thing they did is they changed the price. And then they had people rate the jams. And naturally, the highest price one tasted the best.
Right.
And so it's a weird dynamic. People don't really consider this fact. It is a very weird thing that happens when you invest more in something, your perception of it changes a lot more.
Right.
So, and it's the opposite true. If you invest in something that's small, like a small investment sling, you don't view it as that valuable, right? It's like if you get free swag, right? You get free swag, you're like, oh, this is cool. Goes to Goodwill and about a month later. Right. Because you just don't value it. You didn't pay anything for it. It's free. It doesn't mean anything. So I 100% agree. And I found too, actually, and I really want to ask you, there's an imposter syndrome that comes with raising your prices, right? There's this resistance that comes like it's not even like, should I do it? It's more like, am I good enough to deserve this price? And I think for me, I saw the same thing as you. It's like, I was delivering these insane audits, this insane work. And I'm like, these guys are charging 10 grand for like a SEMrush report. Like, mm-hmm. I couldn't even, it blew my mind. So I'm like, okay, that's it. I gotta do something different. So like, how did you get over the imposter syndrome element of that? Cause that's something I hear a lot.
So I'm going to say, first and foremost, I don't think, for me, I'm never going to get over the imposter syndrome. The fact that when I am done with a big deliverable or an audit, that I sit there and will like stare at the send button for like 10 minutes and even go back and like check things again. Like, to me, that is actually like a good quality. I view it as like, I am making sure that I'm giving them the best that I am capable of providing. Like, that's almost independent of the value, right? Like, there's a certain amount of trust in the value that I can, but as we know, it's like, there are areas to skip corners and make things go quicker. But at the end, like, you need to be able to put your head down on the pillow and go to sleep. So that's kind of what I ask myself. It's like, am I there? And if that's the case, like, I send it. But the imposter syndrome, like, I don't think it ever goes away. I mean, how many times, you know, I can't speak for you, but it's like, you go to a conference, you jump online, I'm reading articles all day long, and it's like, oh, you didn't write this massive script that automates, you know, 30% of all your work, and, you know, you're not, you know, doing this or that, and, you know, ChatGPT this, and it's just like, oh no, like, my clients are still focusing on, like, getting their title tags done, but yeah, I'm charging them $5,000, but nobody thinks about, oh, you're navigating this complex matrix organization where nobody talks to each other, budgets exist in different levels, and you are getting buy-in to be able to do this. So all that being said, I don't think it imposter syndrome ever goes away. And instead of like telling myself, hey, you're amazing, I feel like I try to kind of lean into it a little bit and say, what can I do to be a little bit better today than I was yesterday?
That's smart. That's smart. Yeah. So let's talk about the consultant side of this, because there's basically two routes you can go on your own, right? As far as services, you can go the consultant route, which is, you know, you're doing consulting and audits and advising and you're a coach. The other one is you just do it all, right? You take it on agency style, you do all the work. Each has its pros and its cons, right? Mm-hmm. The one con of being a consultant, though, and is what I've experienced personally, is you invest all this time in this beautiful audit. It's detailed. It's actionable. It's got everything it needs for them to succeed. All they have to do is just go by one little step at a time, and they just have to do the work. Okay. But as you probably experience, you send that report over and everyone's super excited. You do the call, you go over and, oh, this is so good. And then a month passes, and then 2 months, and then 3 months, and two things happen. Nothing gets done. That's the most common. Nothing gets done. And then number two, what they do isn't even based on the recommendations that you gave them.
Right.
So how do you handle those two? How do you handle those two problems?
Yeah. So I'll be completely honest. Like, I'm trying to kind of get away from SEO audits. Like, it takes a lot of time. They're stressful for me. And like, it increases my anxiety because I know I have a big deliverable that needs to be due in 30 days or whatever.
Right.
So I'm trying what am I trying to say? I'm trying really hard to avoid like one-off projects like that. Like I said, because I don't need to operate in scale as a consultant, I'm looking for clients that are kind of all in. So with that being said, what I might do is say, you know, an audit of your website is kind of like a mechanic opening up your hood. Like, you got to start there. So it's not that I won't do audits, but what I'll do is say, let's do an audit, but it's going to be tied to a 3-month commitment. That way I'm the one like walking you through it. And I understand the hurdles that are going through to implement things. And at that point, I'm also a big fan. I know a lot of agencies can't necessarily do this, but I hate the idea of people being trapped in contracts. So what I do is I'll say, make a 3-month commitment to me, because SEO does take time. And we have to build process. But if at any point in time you don't see the value, or I simply don't want to work with you, and I say that to clients, like, it's got to be both sides of it. 30-day notice, either one or both of us, we're out. And I think at that point, what it does is, because again, as a consultant, I can only work with so many people. I don't want to waste my time working with clients that don't take this seriously.
Yeah. It's true.
And that's the benefit of a consultant versus I need 50 clients to be able to feed 30 people, 100 people.
Right.
You know, it's like I can kind of cherry pick. And it's a huge luxury, and I don't pretend to ignore that.
Yeah. And I mean, this is a conscious decision that you have to make. Like, what is the style that you want to, type of business you want to operate? And I think there's definitely a lot of benefits to both. I mean, the beauty of agency is cash flow, right? I mean, you can stack on that cash and it can be very, very lucrative, but it's also the stress levels are much higher because now you're responsible for execution and, you know, you're creating articles for someone else and they don't like the article. And then there's a lot more logistical issues. And so I'm definitely more on the side of like where you are. We're like, okay, this is what you need to do. Let's work through this to get this done. Let's build the procedure. Let's build the processes to get this done. So I 100% agree. One thing I wanted to ask you, because you do something very interesting, which I don't see a lot of people do. You're upfront with your pricing, which I think is very fascinating.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, because...
Yeah, and again, I think, and this is the part where it's like, I read your book and it's like, yeah, all this sounds great. Like it is kind of your standard to-do list. It's best practice. It's data-driven and validated. But again, I reiterate, and this sounds very condescending and I don't mean to be, but it's like, as a freelancer, I am exceptionally aware that my resources only go so far. If I want to take another client on outside of a certain amount, that means that I'm not going to be at my daughter's gymnastics practice. Like, so I'm unwilling to do that. So again, I've been on the agency side. I know what clients have what pain points. So why do I want to spend the time talking to somebody for 90 minutes, you know, dream about their SEO strategy to find out that, oh yeah, we paid our last agency $1,200. So if I start at the very beginning and say, hi, I'm Nick. I'm very blunt and honest, but like I'm very excited and passionate about SEO. I've been doing this for almost 15 years and I've had some good success. My minimum retainers are $5,000 and, you know, help me better understand what you're trying to achieve with SEO. And we're 10 minutes into the conversation and it's like they can self-eliminate themselves if they want at that point. If money is the only thing that matters to them, I have 10 people that I can refer them to, and they could probably do a good job. But again, if money is their number one priority, I am probably not the best fit. I position myself as almost a fractional SEO director. I want to be a part of your team. I want to help build the process. If you're going to value me only as the outside consultant that I get 10 hours, I need to make damn sure I get, you know, 10.5 and not 9.5, we're not going to be a good fit.
Yeah, I think it's genius because I think when you're operating from a value-based pricing, like obviously you're not a commodity, like it's largely based on your 15 years of experience. That's where the price comes from. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of utility to have it on the front end because of course you're going to eliminate all the garbage right away. Like the people who are willing to make that investment, they don't see the value. They're not even going to get in touch with you. So you save yourself a lot of time. So how do you, this is an important point as far as the client qualification, how are you qualifying these leads? Like what's your process look like? What are certain things you're looking at? We're like, ooh, I don't really like what they said about that particular thing. What are your red flags? What are your go signs?
Yeah. So the first question that I always ask people is like, what are you looking to achieve with SEO? And you'd be surprised that there's still a lot of companies, I would say more companies than not, haven't even really invested in SEO. They'll say whatever they're kind of getting currently is just a byproduct of their product or their service or, you know, their larger marketing efforts. So a lot of times they'll come to me and just say, like, we know this works. We know it's valuable. We want to get something started. On the flip side, there are people that, like, as soon as they sit there and say, we have 5 keywords, that's all we care about. Our CEO Googles it every morning. And if we lose, like, we are done. And it's just like, for me, like, that's a red flag. Like, I'm almost out. Like, I'll self-eliminate. Yeah. So it's just trying to say, also, if people are saying that they've worked with multiple agencies before, you know, it's like odds are they're just hopping between agencies. But I will ask them, you know, very clearly, you know, what is it that you liked about the agency and what is it that you don't like? Because the one thing that I try really hard is my value prop when I am selling myself, and people love it or hate it immediately, is basically when you hire me at a premium rate, you get me for the keyword research, the invoicing, the SEO strategy. You know, it's like, it's me. Like, I'm not going to be the one that comes in, sells you on the dream, and then hands you off to people that are making $30 an hour as SEO interns. And people get excited by that. That's kind of that authority, or not, sorry, the authority, but the, when they say I'm authentic or genuine, it's like, just throw it out there. So if people aren't interested in that, or they're looking for, we need to create 10,000 pieces of content a month, I'll make it very clear. It's like, I'm not an army, nor do I try to play one on TV. And I will ask, do they have systems? Do they have resources? Most of my clients are enterprise level. So they have content teams, dev teams, you know, PR teams. And what they don't have is they don't have a maestro to organize it all, you know, to work in sync. And that's what I'm looking for when I'm talking. So if you don't have those, you have unrealistic expectations, your budget is nothing, your expectations are crazy high, those are my biggest red flags.
Yeah. Do you guarantee results, Nick?
Absolutely not. So in fact, I think, Nate, you probably saw this. I just posted on LinkedIn. Yeah, I don't know when this will go live, but you'll appreciate this. I have an existing client. And again, enterprise clients, you find that you can end up building clients within a larger client. So there was a division for their Canada site, and they wanted some quotes for some services for upcoming year. And the individual, after receiving it, did talk to me. He goes, what kind of ROI do you guarantee for this? And I said, none. And I just sat there for a moment. I said, the reason that I will not provide you a guarantee is because Google's algorithms are proprietary. Anybody that looks you in the face and makes you a promise is flat out lying to you. What I can commit to you is that I will use my 15 years of SEO knowledge to be able to implement all the best practices and a strategy that should bring us to a better spot. But the official answer is none.
Oh, I mean, it's, that's the way you got to do it, right? I mean, and I was going to say, the only thing, like, when I'm in my negotiation phase, the only thing I'll guarantee is the work, right? I'll guarantee the work. Like, the work will be done. I can't predict the stock market either, right? And how much do investment bankers get paid? They get paid really, really well, and they can't even beat the market. Like statistically, a monkey does better than that. So
I always joke, it's SEOs and weather people that get paid for their best guesses.
Right. Yeah. So that's a good way to put it. But yeah, I think it's an important point. So so walk me through you kind of outlined your discovery call process, basically. What is your sales process look like?
Yeah, so I think my sales process is, you know, I don't do a lot of outboard marketing, you know, in the sense that I'm trying to get people to come to me. A lot of people are coming to me, so it's more inbound. So a lot of times what I will do is I love just jumping on a call right away, which is funny because I told you at the very beginning of my career, I did everything to avoid that. But I like to see if I can kind of build a connection right away. Like, hey, are we talking pretty well, or does it feel super stiff and I'm like nervous to talk to you and you're like already doubting SEO? I'll give, you know, just like I said, straight up, you know, this is how I work. Here are my minimums. Here is my backstory. A lot of times I'll try to address the value of why go with a consultant versus an agency, or why you should go with an agency versus a consultant. And then again, hard for me, as people are going to be able to tell with this interview, but I try to shut up and listen. Tell me what you want. I then try to do a lot of like, if I'm hearing you correct, or I heard you, and then I'll identify it. I don't often give scopes or, you know, direct SOWs in the call. What I will do is, and it's interesting, this goes a little bit different than what you had recommended in your book, Nathan, is I will tell them, let me get back to you, and I will give you an informal scope via email. We're talking bullet points with a price and what that kind of means from like a time commitment, and when a time start would look like. And then I look for them to kind of give me the verbal yes or no. And only at that point will I write up the extensive scope. Smart. So my official scopes have like a 95% acceptance rate, because I will not spend hours or days, you know, doing RFPs or creating massive scopes or giving away free strategies. So then with that, honestly, the sales call ends kind of right there. I'm also in a fortunate situation where it's like, I don't chase people too much. I will send one or two emails, but I did learn from your book. I do like the scarcity idea of, but kind of like, hey, I'm going to respect your inbox. I'm done. I've got some other opportunities, but that'll be like my second email, and it either works or it doesn't. But again, I will preface, the whole aspect of this working is because I'm a solo individual with no intentions for now scaling beyond 3 or 4 clients. I wouldn't recommend going my approach if you're trying to gather enough work for 10 people.
Right. Yeah. And are you, so when you send over the official scope of work, like the official proposal, statement of work, whatever you want to call it, are you getting back on another call to go over that? Or are you just basically sending over like, here it is?
It depends. I don't require them to jump on a call to go over it with me, because I feel like we've already talked conceptually on the original call of what I would provide and how we would approach it. So I do let them kind of make a decision. I will say that it's kind of 50-50 of whether somebody wants to jump on a call to get some clarification, or especially if it's going through like a legal team, you know, or, you know, internal review, there might be some jargon we have to work with. But no, again, I kind of let them self-select. And again, it's almost like when you have to empower them to put a little bit of effort into it, they kind of weed themselves out when they're not going to be a good partner.
Yeah. Yeah. I 100% agree. Yeah. I mean, it's all about positioning, right? I mean, I think some people make it like, if you're trying to be perceived as someone of high value in your vertical, it shouldn't be easy to work with you. Like, it should be difficult, right? If you were going to, like the late David Ogilvy, like, you wouldn't be able to just call David Ogilvy up and be like, hey, can you write me some copy? Like, right. You'd have to go through a lot of channels to eventually get to him. And that's
what I think part of that is being very intentional. I don't know if you've read The Million Dollar Consultant by Alan Wise.
Yeah.
And, you know, he talks about that. You know, it's like, if you're going to be a consultant, be very intentional in providing kind of the star on your back of like, make people want to come to you and provide the value, charge a premium, because that's the only way. I don't think you ever can quite make as much money as the alternative of like agency and scaling, because you kind of have an unlimited cap. But if you want to be able to make a I think almost anybody, I'll put a little asterisk on that, but anybody can be a freelancer and kind of make that $60,000 to $80,000 that a lot of people in the SEO world are making. But if you want to get into the multiple six figures, like, you either have to become exceptionally good and build that visibility, or you have to scale, you know, outside of just yourself.
Right. Yep. Absolutely. Well, I know you got to run. So how can people find you, Nick?
Absolutely. So first and foremost, my website is nickleroy.com. You can find me on Twitter or X at Nick Leroy. Same with LinkedIn. And also would love to see you guys at the lunch table. My newsletter is SEO for Lunch, and you can find that at SEOforLunch.com.
Okay. Awesome. Thank you so much, Nick. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Nathan. Appreciate your time.